Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get ready to get blitzed on the Blitz podcast at thehuddle.com with your hosts Steve Gallo and Harley Schultz.
Hey, welcome back to the Blitz Podcast. I'm Steve Gallo, joined by Harley Schultz, as always. Harley, week six is approaching. 33 1/3% of the NFL season is done.
And as would be expected in a marathon sprint, I'm completely winded.
Yeah, well, you know, before we just started recording, I said, hold on, my dog's barking. I'm still catching my breath from going downstairs once. So I know what that means. I have a saying. I don't know if I've ever shared this before. I see people that are like joggers, and I'm like, oh, why are you running? Why run where you can bike? And then I see bikers, and I'm like, oh, why are you biking? Why bike where you can drive? And then I see people drive. I'm like, why drive where you can fly? That's my
help. Well, I always get a kick out of here in Minnesota in the wintertime. You get all the people still trying to bike in the snow. Like, that's just stupid.
Yeah. My favorite is, so we had a, I don't know how many miles, 30, 40 mile bike path put in between Williamsburg, Virginia, where Jamestown was, right? Where our country was, you know, birthed basically, all the way to Richmond, the capital of Virginia. And it's called the Colonial Bike Trail or something like that. And I love when I would hear people that were biking say, I hate when these people are on here pushing their babies and walking, and it's just such a danger to us. And I'm like, you ever looked at yourself when you're on the road when there's no shoulder and there's cars coming 55 mile an hour behind you? Like, a little bit of awareness may be good here for you.
Well, and so we always get some interesting news up here this time of year too, and it was a bit of a shocker. On one of the police vans up here a couple days ago, I saw a report that there was a motorcycle accident with a deer. Now, first off, that seems kind of confusing to me. Like, well, how does the person on a motorcycle not see a deer? At least not enough to be able to avoid the deer from the accident standpoint. But then I read further into the story, and it said, two people were airlifted to the hospital. Like, how are two people involved in an accident with a motorcycle and a deer?
Well, I mean, you can have a rider on the back.
That's ultimately what I came to. And it's like, well, at least that makes some sense. And maybe the two were somehow involved in a conversation which distracted the cyclist from the deer. But it's still one of those things where it's like, you hear about deer running in front of cars all the time. If you're in a car, you may not see the deer coming from the first. If you're like on a bike, you should see the deer.
Well, maybe they had a sidecar. I will say this. So I'm from the South Jersey area. There are tons of deer in South Jersey. When I was younger, in my 20s, me and my buddies would be coming back from Atlantic City and taking these back roads back to where we lived in South Jersey, right? And stuff, and even from Philly and stuff. And we would have what we call put your deer eyes on, right? Mm-hmm. And one of us is watching the one shoulder, and that's the driver's watching the left shoulder, and the other guy's kind of watching the right shoulder. And all you're supposed to be looking for are those little sparkles, those little red dots when your lights hit them, because they do come out of nowhere and come out of nowhere fast.
Yeah, and you kind of mess up the venison if you hit them with the car.
Yeah, I know there's people around here, they pick them up off the side of the road if it just happens, and it's the time of year that you can eat them, I guess. I don't know. I'll pass. Hey, you know, I guess we should tell people we're not recording on Monday night like normal. We're recording on Tuesday. And that's because of the Major League Baseball playoffs and me having to watch my Phillies squander away a huge opportunity to go up 2-0 on Atlanta in Atlanta, going back to the bank. Wheeler had a no-hitter through six, I believe it was, struck out 10. His first six outs were recorded by strikeout. We're up 4-0 at one point, I think, through five. Wind up losing 5-4. So my question to you is, I know you're a Minnesota fan. I'm not trying to throw any salt in your wound. Your guys lost 9-1 tonight. Which is easier or harder to deal with? Like, because I'm still sick about that 5-4 loss. But how does a 9-1 loss hit? Like, and it was at home for you guys. Is it easier to deal with? Is it harder to deal with? I'm asking.
Well, typically, if you lose 9-1, it's usually just completely one sided. So it's like maybe you like can brush it off a little quicker. But at least in the Twins' case today, it's kind of painful because they were starting Sonny Gray, who was kind of the co-ace of this pitching staff this season with Pablo Lopez, and he went out there and gave up four runs in the first inning, basically setting the tone that it was going to be a loss from right from the get-go. So, again, I didn't see that first inning, so quite possibly if I had been home, maybe things would have been different. Who knows? No, not really. I don't think I have that much control over this. But
no, it's baseball. It's baseball. Superstition matters, man. Trust me, I know. Superstition and baseball goes hand in hand.
I mean, it's just like with football. I mean, so look back to last Thursday. If you had the fortune of having Justin Fields and DJ Moore in your lineup on Thursday, you pretty much had your contest won already when Thursday was done. And, of course, if you had the pleasure of facing those two, oh, well, your whole weekend was pretty much shot. Now, I like to comment on this because I think it's kind of interesting. I was stuck in the middle of those. In one of my longest standing redraft leagues, one that I've been playing in for well over 30 years, I was facing both of those guys. But in this year's Scott Fish Bowl, I actually had both of those guys. So it was like, yes, I felt the joy and pleasure of having won it. And then I also felt the pain and anguish of realizing that Moore almost scored more points than my entire team did on Sunday. It was that other league. So that was kind of painful. Adding insult to injury, that guy also had like Jamar Chase and like three other guys that all scored over 20 points against me. So he set like a like second highest score in the history of the league. And I think I finished with about 50. But in the Scott Fish Bowl, I finished with 306, which wasn't top 10, but it had to be pretty darn close this week.
So, you know, I kind of had I had more of, I think, the Phillies thing happen to me, and I think it was Scott Fish Bowl. And I think what you're saying is if you know your week's toast after Thursday night, kind of makes you not have to sweat the week out, right? Like, you don't sweat your decisions as much. It's just, okay, whatever, I lost. We'll mail it in, right?
Well, yes and no. I mean, if you're in that spot, obviously, if there's any like hope and prayer of your team getting back into it, you have to look at your roster and you have to make those high risk, high reward decisions. Sure. Now, again, when you're down 80 on Thursday because Fields and Moore, you're probably not going to catch him no matter who you pull off your bench that might have a surprising performance. You're probably hosed there. So then, yeah, you can kind of just like forget about it and whatnot. But yeah, for everyone else, like, you know, if you're down 10, if you're down 20 and you don't love your matchups, or you've got matchups that you're like some of your regular starters are maybe in a shadier matchup, go ahead and pull them this week. Go ahead and stick in that long shot and take that shot in the dark that maybe this player will come out and do something for you. Because, again, you're not going to win more than likely, but at least then you got something like give you some prayer, some glimmer of hope.
Yeah, well, I had DJ Moore. I'm looking at it now. And and Scott Fishbowl, I lost by 1 point, truly 1 point, 230.09 to 231.09. I can point to a bunch of different things. I can point to the fact that he picked up Jaleel McLaughlin. I could point to the fact that he had Josh Downs in his lineup, or Zay Jones in his lineup, or Brandon Aubrey from the Cowboys. I mean, that feels more heart-wrenching to me that you actually thought you had a chance to pull out a win, and then you look and you lost by a point. I don't know.
Well, quick breakdown from my Scott Fishbowl matchup this week, just to give you an idea. Obviously, because I started DJ and I started Fields on Thursday, they combined for 103.73 points. Then it got to the weekend, and I had some bye week issues. Yeah. So I had to do a little flexibility at some other positions. Obviously, my running backs are a very big part of my team. So I started Travis Etienne, who had 50 points. I started Derrick Henry, who had a down game. But I was kind of forced to make a few decisions, one of which was starting Zach Moss, because the only other like bench players I had were either on bye or injured. He went off and scored 45 points. And oh, yeah, my tight end George Kittle added 30 also.
Yeah, there's another league I sweated one out, actually. And I sweated it out because of Luke Musgrave and his 9.4 points that he scored. I won by less than 2.5 points. So I guess I shouldn't complain. But imagine, that would be like having your heart ripped out to have Luke Musgrave take a win away from you on Monday night. But in any event, I think that what we should do is throw it over to Harley for this week's Blitzed Podcast News.
Thank you, Steve. Travis Kelce briefly left Sunday's game with an ankle injury that looked way worse than it apparently was. When asked about it after the game, Travis said that he would seek out some Swift therapy when they got back to KC. Anthony Richardson left yet another game this Sunday due to a shoulder injury. Since he has struggled to go deep into games this season, in honor of the baseball postseason, perhaps Indianapolis can opt for a baseball solution and use Richardson as an opener, with Gardner Minshew serving as the bulk reliever. That could be an interesting strategy. To the dismay of Jonathan Taylor owners everywhere, Zach Moss went berserk on their benches and in my starting lineup, while Taylor barely played on their active rosters. This came just a few days after the Colts gave Taylor a massive contract extension. Let me start by issuing my congratulations to Mr. Taylor for the new contract, and congratulations to Mr. Moss for the big game, and of course, congratulations to Jim Irsay for another in a long string of football financial foibles. Kyle Pitts and Drake London both finally posted fantasy-relevant stat lines as Desmond Ridder threw the ball 37 times for 329 yards. Consider this your PSA telling you to sell them both now before Arthur Smith can punish Ridder for disregarding his game plan in an attempt to perform like an actual NFL quarterback. And finally, Daniel Jones left this Sunday's game with a neck injury. This seems fitting, as his play has been a pain in the neck to his fantasy owners all season. This has been your BPN News Update.
Okay. So I think you got it backwards. You should start with Minshew and then bring AR out of the pen.
I think that's a good strategy.
Wouldn't you rather have him for the last like quarter and a half?
Particularly if Minshew can get you a lead, because Richardson can run the ball a little bit to basically wear out the clock. I think you're onto something there.
Hey, one of the hardest things to do is to take your own advice. Wouldn't you agree?
Exactly.
I had a buddy of mine. He worked for me years ago. He only texts me during fantasy season, honestly. Occasionally during the year, but not much. But fantasy season religiously, right? Every Saturday or Sunday. Saturday night, he texts me, start Jonathan Taylor, blah, 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 blah. No, don't start him. Not this week. See what's happening. See if they work him back in, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I had JT in three of my lineups. And in two of those leagues, I had Zach Moss on the bench. And in one of those leagues, I had DA from Miami. I'm not going to mess his name up. Devin Achane. Is that it?
Nevon Achan.
Achan.
H-A-Chan. A-Chan. Sorry.
I had A-Chan on my bench also because I wanted to get JT in the lineup. I didn't realize I had that many damn shares of JT, but for what it is, I guess. Anyway, sometimes hard to take your own advice.
I played Taylor over Moss in one league. And obviously it wasn't a good result, but I did manage to hold on for a very close win in that game. Thanks kind of semi ironically to Kyle Pitts's performance.
Yeah.
You could have assumed that Jonathan Taylor might have been eased into things, but I did not expect that sort of
easing in
snap differential.
Yeah, I didn't either, honestly. But it is what it is. So, hey, I guess we should tell people what we're going to do this week. We're, of course, going to do our DFS pay-up, stay-aways, and value plays. But in addition to that, we're going to play a little game. Maybe it's not really a game, but that's what I'm going to say. And we're going to call it Contender or Pretender. And by that, what I mean is, it's, you know, we're going to be a third of the way through the NFL season. It's time for you to know if your team is someone that's going to contend for the trophy and or if you're a pretender. Are you going to be a spoiler? So I'm going to throw it over to you and let you start us off.
Well, I think that my team is going to be contender every year. I stay active all season, even if my team starts to fall off. But it's you just go into a season and there's teams that like to, from a dynasty standpoint at least, there's teams that like to go into a rebuild. And I can never quite take that on. It's not that I don't appreciate the logic behind it, but I always feel like if I have a strong enough draft, if the players I have and that I like can perform like they should perform, I'm always going to at least be in the running to be a contender. Now, it doesn't always happen. And I think the key thing is that you have to know there's a point in the season where you have to make that decision, because much like a cold room theory in an auction, there's also a cold room period in trading. And what I mean by that is that when you're going to look at the teams that want to buy someone, they're going to be buying someone as early as they can. And what that means is they're going to be selling off their best sellable assets, their best future assets, earlier. So if you wait too long to sell your tradable assets, you're going to be selling those tradable assets for less value. That is why it's important to identify early on if you should be a seller.
Yeah. One of my
now,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was going to say this week six is a great week to make that decision. Again, we're talking from a dynasty standpoint more so than a redraft. Obviously, if you're in a redraft situation, you've started 1-5 or 0-6 or even 2-4. I mean, it's a one season league year. You're not going to really get anything that's going to put you into a position to win it all this year. And it's kind of that point in the season where you can offer some of your players up to people, but it's best just to go ahead and feel as competitive a team as you can all season to keep the league fair for all the other teams that are trying to compete with those higher seeded teams.
So one of the things I want to point out, this week there's only two teams on bye, right? So you only have Green Bay and Pittsburgh, and not a lot of fantasy-relevant players on those two teams for the most part, right? Not difference makers anyway. But in week seven, there's six teams on bye, right?
That's just crazy.
The two most marquee players are probably both Ja'Marr Chase and CeeDee Lamb. But, of course, Joe Burrow has some shine to him. Dak, I'm not sure if he does. Tony Pollard may have some shine to him. My point is, look at those players and see if they're on a team that's kind of on the cusp. They can't afford to take a loss, right? And I'm not saying that
you're... This is what we're talking, those 2-4 teams, the 3-3 teams.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that you're going to pillage them, right? Because it's, look, we all want to do this, and we don't want to be somebody that gets shunned because we always take advantage of somebody. But that's where you can possibly come up with a win-win and help yourself to turn a lesser player at wide receiver into a Jamar Chase type, because you gave a player that will help cover Jamar Chase's buy along with a little bump at running back or something like that, because maybe you're solid at running back. I love doing those kind of deals, and that's something you should be scoping out right now, right, for next week.
Well, getting those teams' ears now. You've got that as an option, but you also have not just bye weeks to cover, but all of a sudden we've got injuries. Big news such as Justin Jefferson being placed on IR for a minimum of 4 weeks now.
Yep.
He's going to be gone. You've got a lot of Justin Jefferson teams, which based on their start to the season, are probably teams that were expecting to, A, get into the playoffs, and B, go far.
Well, the thing with
all of a sudden now they're looking at potentially four gutter balls in a row.
Now, the thing with Justin Jefferson, where his value is going to come in, I think, is if you're that team that's out of it and it's a keeper league, right?
Yes.
And you have a Jamar Chase maybe, or you've got somebody that's a little second, maybe Jalen Waddle type, right? And
Tyreek Hill.
But you can offer them up and get Justin Jefferson to get yourself an upgrade down the line and for years to come, right? Or if it's a dynasty, you can do that also, where you can say, look, I'm going to help you out. I know that I'm getting a better deal long term, but look, you got a shot to win this year. You need somebody that can come in and at least give you those points. So why wouldn't you consider taking a Jalen Waddle or a – I don't know if Devontae Smith would get it done considering he just had one catch last week. But you know what I'm getting at.
I think the two guys definitely, if I owned and I was in the rebuild – I do that thing with my fingers here that obviously people can't see because we're podcasting. But the rebuilders can look at is, like I said, Tyreek Hill, who has gone on record saying he's going to retire at the age of 33. We don't know if that's actually going to happen or not. And also Devontae Adams, another wide receiver who's still got studly attributes, but who's definitely long in the tooth. Those two guys would be guys that I would be putting out there if I had them and saying, hey, look, much like you said, I know I'm getting the better play in the long term. And obviously, I'm not just going to give you Devontae Adams for Justin Jefferson. I'm going to give you Devontae Adams plus maybe a third running back to cover some buys.
Yeah. Yep.
And then, like, you know, here's the thing. You're going to get through these 4 weeks, and Devontae's going to have a good season for you. Tyreek's going to have a good season for you. Tyreek is actually posting numbers similar to Jefferson's for the first 4 weeks. Yep. That person should be happy to be able to say, oh, hey, look, I had four big weeks from Jefferson. Now I can have a few big weeks from Tyreek, and my numbers aren't going to go down at all.
Yep. They're the kind of win-win things that you need to work on. And knowing if you're a contender or a pretender, in my eyes, is a big part of that.
And again, I think the key thing to do, too, is, like I said, look at the makeup of your roster. I mean, for me, in one of my leagues, I am 1-5. In that very league, I also had Austin Eckler as my first-round pick. And now he's finally coming back this week. The rest of that team is actually pretty solid.
Right.
It's not elite, but it's pretty solid. But I've ran into some monster performances against me. So I can look at that and say, you know what? This team could still make a run, particularly if they get back Eckler this week and he plays more than Jonathan Taylor did next couple weeks. Again, knock on wood that happens. I'm doing that thing where I knock on something. Again, you guys can't see me because this is a podcast. But, yeah, again, look at guys like that and think, you know what? If your team has a legitimate chance. Like if you're sitting at 1-5, if you're sitting at 2-4 after this week, and you look at your team, and you cannot see an obvious path to the playoffs, then you should be selling. And what I mean by an obvious path is, look at how your team's playoffs are set up. Is it just the top six scoring teams? Is it the top six teams based on record? Is your league broken up into divisions? That is actually probably the easiest way to look at to get into playoffs. If you're in a division where you're maybe 2-4 after this week, but everyone else is 3-3 or 4-2. So there's only two games separating you and that first place team. There's a very good likelihood that you have a chance to come back and win that division. If you win that division, there you go. You're into your playoffs. So again, know your league settings, know what can get you into the playoffs. Maybe it's just the highest scoring team. If your team is scoring high, but you just happen to be losing, maybe you'll get in as like the sixth seed in your playoffs by being the all point scoring leader.
And you know what else?
Look at
look beyond the record. Okay.
Yes.
13-week season. You sit at 8-1. Are you a contender or a pretender? It really
again,
depends.
If you're at 8-1, you may not have a winning team for the playoffs.
Yep, because I can talk to this one specifically. A few years back in a 16-team Dynasty League, 8-1, and the last, I think, three games of the season are against your division mates. And I had eked out some wins during the year. I didn't have a horrible team. They weren't all pansy wins. But I had some horrible matchups down the line. I lost four straight, finished 8-5, tied for the division lead, okay? But I lost out on a tiebreaker. And there was no wild card because that went to somebody with a 9-4 record. So
know your league rules.
Know your league rules and know that you can look at your record, but don't let that the be-all, end-all. Look at your team. Look at the makeup. Look at the buys. Look at your matchups. Look at the teams that you expect to see. Yeah, those things can all change. But the more data you put in, the better output you'll get, basically, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, of course, if you are in a redraft league where – this season, if you start 0-6 or 1-5, you're basically done. Again, don't lose track of your team. Keep track of your team. Keep your team playing the best lineup possible each week. Again, keep it fair for those teams that are trying to maybe sneak their way into the playoffs. And more importantly, talk to your league mates after the season and say, hey, this is fun, but let's just make this a dynasty league and next year we'll draft players and we'll get to keep these players because then you get all the fun of dynasty play too.
Here's another thing. Let's say that you are 0-6 or 1-5 or something, right? Mm-hmm. But you've taken some hard losses, but you've scored a lot of points, and your league has either a payout for high score at the end of the year, or maybe there's a playoff spot for high score. What do you do differently? At that point, you're not looking to try and win a game. You're looking to try and put a lineup out that will score the absolute most points for you. So that means you may take some swings for the fences that have much more variables of high risk reward versus a safe play. Because you know at 0-6 or 1-5, you're not getting into playoffs based on record. You need to get it in points. So that could change how you manage your team. That's where you have to, like you said, know your league, know your settings, and then make the plan and try to work it. It's best you can do.
Is a good segue into playing in DFS because it's always nice to have a couple of players available for late swap in DFS. Guys in those afternoon games or on Fanball, if you've got a guy or two in the evening game, primetime game, it's nice to have those guys available because when you look at your score after the 1 o'clock set and you realize that your team is close to the top, but you look at the spots that are available on the teams ahead of you or the spots on the teams behind you that are open, you can kind of get a feel from the remaining three or four games on the slate who those players might be that they would have and what players you obviously you know who you have. But that's when you can start thinking to yourself, okay, if I know that I'm behind these teams and they've all got a running back slot open and I've got Christian McCaffrey sitting in the late game, but I look at most of their rosters and they've got salary such that they could afford to have Christian McCaffrey in their slot. Odds are they've got Christian McCaffrey in their slot. And what that's telling me is that, okay, I need to do a swap here from my spot and take McCaffrey out of mine, put someone else in there who's got decent upside in the late games. And if you happen to have two slots available, that's nice because maybe then you can pivot at that other spot, spend a little bit more money on a player in that game that might be more, again, a little bit more variance from the teams ahead of you in the standings.
I'll roll us back to non-daily real quick. You know, I do the same thing even when I'm setting my lineups. If I've got an injured guy in a late game and I'm looking at who I can play in my early games, if one of those guys is even to another guy that's in an early game, I may bypass playing the early game guy so I have an option in case my late guy is out.
Good point.
So, in any event, we are going to get into our daily DFS stuff. And for those that don't know, and I probably say this every week and don't have to, Harlan and I do not discuss this in advance. I don't know how he's thinking, other than from the telepathy of all the years we've been doing this. Same with him to me. But he's going to set an over-under, and we'll see if I can't get it wrong like always.
Well, this week here, again, we only have the two teams on bye, but I was looking at the matchups, and there's not a lot of great matchups this week. So I think that there's going to be some pretty obvious pay-ups and maybe even obvious value player, too. So we set the line at 6 today.
Oh, that's just tough.
Which is really high.
That's really tough because I was thinking, I think we can get 6. So Vegas is on point again. Vegas Harley's on point. Damn. And it's hard to take over 6 when we only have 12 spots.
Yep.
Oh, goodness. I can't do it. I got to take the under.
I think that's the right way to go.
We're going to land. Again, we're going to hit 6.
I think we're going to hit 5 personally, but again, that's why they lay 6 as the number.
I think we're going to hit 6. I think it's going to be a push. But go ahead. Start us off. Who are you paying up for at the quarterback spot?
Okay, so at quarterback, I'm going to go with Tua Tagovailoa versus Carolina. He's 7,600 on DraftKings, 8,300 on FanDuel. Carolina's defense has actually regressed in each of the last 3 weeks. And now they face what is the top passing offense in the league with Miami. And realistically, they may have to throw the ball even more with Devon Achane and Raheem Mostert both dinged up.
That is true. And it's a match. And they're at home. I love them at home.
Yes.
Yeah, we match. We're going to probably match 2, maybe 3 of the quarterback spots, I think. Who are you staying away from?
Well, if I'm paying up for the second highest priced guy,
yeah,
logic tells you that I am going to stay away from it. I know this is going to hurt you, Steve, as a Philly fan.
Nope.
I'm going to stay away from Jalen Hurts on the road in New York facing the Jets. The Jets are one of the few teams with a secondary capable of containing the Eagles' wide receivers. They also are one of the few teams with the defensive line which actually has a chance in hell of stopping the tush, push, brotherly shove.
Yeah, we matched there again. No, it doesn't hurt my feelings. This feels like a trap game to me. Everybody thinks that the Jets are a pushover. Because of that defense, they're never really going to be a pushover. It's on the road.
Yeah, I mean, Hurts is going to have a good game, but his prices are $8,200 and $8,700, which are just too high for this matchup.
And he very well could get two brotherly shove touchdowns, right, and salvage a day. But I don't think that's where it's at. I don't think that I would bank on him having a day that gets 3 times. If he does, fine, but it's not going to be something that you feel comfortable with. Who's your value play? Because I had a little bit of a tough time finding a value play, and I only saw 2 guys that really jumped out at me. I'm interested to see.
Yeah, it's kind of the same with both. There's not a lot of fun stuff to choose from in the lower price ranges here. If you're like in the mood to gamble, this is not the play I chose, but there's always the fun of the revenge game. And you can go that route with Jimmy Garoppolo for basically $5,300 on DraftKings. That's almost near the bottom. But again, it is New England. It's got good secondary, so I'm not gonna take that risk. Aside from maybe just putting him in a couple lineups just for fun, but
you know what?
My value play should be pretty easy.
Hold on. I didn't even see this when I was looking at this. There's another revenge game on the board. Gardner Minshew going home to Jacksonville.
He is my value play, and it is because he does get the revenge game against the Jags. Who, by the way, have allowed multiple total scores to every quarterback not named Desmond Ridder this year.
Okay, so double scores to every real quarterback. I got you.
Yes.
So we don't match. I had 2 guys I wrote down. One was a little lower price, but a little bit more than Minshew. That was – initially it was Joshua Dobbs I had written down. But then I was like, I feel more comfortable. And here's the thing, though. His FanDuel price is a lot higher than I would like to see it, but – for me, Washington going to Atlanta, Sam Howell just seems like maybe he's not going to be, you know, the answer there, but he sure can put up some stats when they get into frenetic time and are trying to put points on the board at the end of the game.
If you're looking for the garbage time, I can understand that. Although, I will say this. In DraftKings and FanDuel, where you have to name a defense, I would not hesitate to use the Atlanta defense, which is very cheap.
Right.
Sam Howell, because he gets sacks a lot.
Yep. I don't really like any of the options at the bottom of the barrel this week. I mean, I really don't. Mm-hmm. Not in love with Dobbs going to L.A., honestly. Looked at Bryce Young. Don't like that on the road, honestly. I'm not a big fan of Desmond Ridder against that Washington defense, which can be better than what we've seen of late. I don't like Baker Mayfield at all, even though he is at home. Yeah, just wasn't a lot of options I was really happy with, honestly.
Yeah, so, again, I like your call. I like Minshew. Considered Derek Carr also. Again, that's on the road. He's dealing with a shoulder.
Yep. All right, take us on over to the running back spot. Who are you paying up for?
So, there's quite a few running backs on the board that I don't really like this.
Yep, I see that.
I ended up settling on the fifth highest priced guy, and I don't think it's that great of a matchup, but I'm going to go with Travis Etienne versus Indianapolis. 7,100 on DraftKings, 7,700 on FanDuel. In week one, Etienne topped 100 yards and scored against this defense. He's coming off the best game of his career out in London there. Plus, Indy has allowed an average of 158 combo yards and three total scores to running backs over the last 2 weeks, so they're kind of trending downward. I still like their run defense a little bit better than their pass defense, but Etienne can beat you both ways, so I think Etienne's going to catch a few passes here too.
So we don't match there. I actually thought we were going to match here. I went with a guy that's on the road against what should be a stout run defense, honestly, but I'm going to point to week three and what DeAndre Swift did with 16 carries and 130 yards. I'm paying up for David Montgomery. 7,300, 8,100. It doesn't feel like it's all that much of a pay-up, quite honestly. Not in love with the fact that it's in Tampa, but based on some of these other matchups, I'm willing to roll the dice with old Monty.
I think a lot in that depends on whether or not we see Jahmyr Gibbs return this week.
Yeah, that is true. But then again, even with Jahmyr Gibbs, what has he done lately?
Well, I do agree with that statement, but I think that Jahmyr Gibbs will be in on more of the passing downs for David Montgomery when the time comes. Yeah. Eventually, that's going to be the plan.
There will be a watershed moment when that happens. Absolutely.
And Tampa Bay is actually a decent run-stopping defense, thanks to the big guys inside there, the linebackers, plus Vita Vea over tackle there. So, I mean, I think, again, if Gibbs isn't playing in this game, I like that call.
Okay. Fair enough. I think we're going to match on the stay away. I could be wrong, but who are you staying away from?
I hate to do it. It's Christian McCaffrey at Cleveland. 9,500 on DraftKings, 10,300 on FanDuel. No running back has topped 13 PPR points versus Cleveland this season. And let's look at this way. McCaffrey is not any old running back. McCaffrey could double that high water mark against Cleveland, get 26 PPR points. It's still not going to be 3x value based on his prices.
Nope. It's a match, by the way. Here's the other thing to think about. One, it's also on the road. Two, Cleveland has had 2 weeks to prepare. They're coming off their bye. I don't like this game for San Francisco at all, quite honestly, but especially not for McCaffrey at those prices.
Yeah, again, I like McCaffrey from a real football standpoint more than from a fantasy DFS standpoint based on that.
Yep. Got you right there, right with you. Who are you looking at value play-wise?
I'm going to give you two chances to match me here.
Okay.
And they're both in the same game.
Interesting.
And they both are dependent on somebody's injury status.
Oh, we're getting closer. We're getting closer. I think we're going to get a match.
It's going to be value play of Chicago starting running back versus Minnesota. So whether that starting running back is Roschon Johnson,
concussion,
who is currently dealing with concussion protocol, or if that starting running back is Deonta Foreman, it's not going to matter because they're both good deals. And Khalil Herbert is definitely out.
Yep.
And Travis Homer is injured. It means that one of these two will be the last man standing. And I really like Foreman at his price of 4,400 on DraftKings, 6,000 on FanDuel, because every time in the history of his career, when he's given the opportunity to be a featured back, he's gone out there and balled out.
Yeah, he is my value play. And I'll tell you, if you really weren't sure what to do, and if Roschon plays, which I don't think he's going to because of the concussion, play Deontay on one where he's cheaper at 4,400, and then play Roschon on FanDuel where he's $200 cheaper if you really want to do that.
That's why I said I wanted to give you two chances to match me here, and well, I think that's just the exact reason why.
I think that we have a match with Deontay Foreman, though.
Yeah, again, that's just look, if you get a chance, go on to like in any website that gives career stats and look at the game logs for Deontay Foreman whenever he has more than 15 touches in a game. He just never has a bad game. It's like when Chicago signed him this offseason, it was basically right after they had let David Montgomery go. And they basically brought him in. And it looked like he was going to compete with Khalil Herbert to be the top running back there. And probably he would have been the top running back with Khalil being more of the change of pace backup guy. But then, of course, they went out and drafted Roschon, too. So that kind of threw a huge monkey wrench into the works.
And what the heck is it with the Bears? What did they do when they put Khalil back in that game?
How did he get approval to go back?
And how did he walk to be able to get back on the field, honestly?
Exactly.
That injury looked horrible. Horrible, actually. Mm-hmm. I was like, wait a minute, did I rewind my remote? Because sometimes the Verizon remote, like you touch it and all of a sudden you're like 6 minutes back and you don't realize it. I was like, crap.
Well, I think this tells us the difference between the Chicago Bears coaching staff and the Kansas City Chiefs coaching staff. In the Kansas City game, you had Travis Kelce trying to sneak onto the field like five plays after injuring his ankle, and the coaches were like running out in the field and grabbing him and dragging him back. Where I think no one was probably paying attention in Chicago. He was probably walked back on the field. Yep,
you're probably right. Well, we have four matches through the first two positions. The over is going to freaking hit probably.
I said Denver. Vegas knows what they're saying when they set the lines.
They sure do. All right, let's get it on over to the wide receiver spot. Who are you paying up for at wide receiver?
I'm going to pay up for the highest priced guy on the board. That's Tyreek Hill at 9,300 on DraftKings, 9,800 on FanDuel. Now, I'm doing this with the caveat that I don't think he's going to hit three times value on either of those sites. But that's more of a denigration of the fact that I don't like any of the high-priced players this week on either side at wide receiver. So I'm just going to pay for the top guy. He seems to have a long 40- or 50-yard touchdown in every single game. He's been averaging nearly 30 points per week. Again, that's not going to be three times value at these prices, but it's going to be pretty damn close.
So, no, we don't match, but I did look at Hill, and he was about the only other person I was considering. I went a couple spots down because I'm like, okay, if I don't love it, I want to save a little bit of money. Cooper Kupp looked pretty good in his first half of return against Philly. They kind of shut him down the second half, though, right? But he looked good, and he's at home against an Arizona team that's been really hit or miss of late, honestly. Like, this season's been just unbelievably bad or unbelievably, like, wow, they just beat the Dallas Cowboys type thing, right? But at 9,000, he's $300 cheaper on DraftKings. And on FanDuel, he's $1,100 cheaper. I just, if I'm going to pay up, I'll pay up for Kupp because I know they're going to try and feed him still. And Matthew Stafford's still healthy. So he feels like he's the safest play in those top priced guys.
You want to know who I almost considered as my pay up?
Who's that?
You have to go all the way down to player number 12 on DraftKings salary wise, and that's Chris Godwin.
Yeah.
Good chance that Mike Evans is limited or may even miss this game, and that's going to make Godwin the top receiving option for Baker. At home versus Detroit, they'll probably be playing from behind, so he's going to catch a lot of passes.
My expectation.
But he's only 6,900, so he doesn't really deserve to be a pay-to-play.
Right. My expectation was that Evans is going to be out or severely limited, so I'm staying away from him, so I didn't even look at that because of that. Who is your stay-away?
Godwin is a potential good play this week.
Yeah. Who is your stay-away? And you're probably like me where Justin Jefferson would have been a punt because of the injury, so he's not somebody I included.
Yeah, I kind of agreed with you. I didn't detest Cooper Kupp. I thought his price was a little bit high for just 1 week back. I didn't mind Ja'Marr Chase's DraftKings price. I don't love his FanDuel price after basically just two good weeks out of his first five. So I sell on the fifth highest priced guy on DraftKings. That's Davante Adams. They're playing at home versus New England. Opposing wide receiver ones are averaging only 12.7 PPR points against New England this season. And I really expect Jacoby Meyers to be featured here in the revenge game narrative against New England. So this feels like a Meyers game and not an Adams game. So even if Adams is 100%, which he didn't look to be 100% this week even, I just can't imagine playing him against New England.
And especially needing him to hit three times value, which is really going to be tough. So first name I wrote down was JJ, and of course I crossed him out because I'm like, that's a punt. We're not going to do that. The next guy I wrote down was Puka, honestly, because you still don't 100% know what to get, but Puka's price, like, Cup's not back almost, right? So I don't love
a thousand his, less on both sides.
Yeah. So I don't love both of those plays. If he was more in the 7,200 range, maybe, but he's not. But I settled right on Davante Adams, just like you. Yeah, it's in Las Vegas. Bill's coming off some really bad losses. Who do you take away in that offense if you're Bill? It's going to be Jimmy taking, you know, and Davante. I don't think they're going to be able to do much with the passing attack.
Yeah. Again, though, we've got double revenge game there with Garoppolo and Meyers. So,
yep.
Again, if you're feeling a little froggy, you got a few extra bucks sitting in your wallet online. Go ahead and stack a lineup with those two. Maybe run it back with like Hunter Henry or someone like that. Or who is the top receiver for? I can't think of the top receiver now for New England.
Kendrick Bourne.
Branch. Bourne, not Branch. Sorry. Yes.
Yeah, Kendrick Bourne.
Interesting stack there you could possibly roll out.
Oh, goodness. You're going to make me sick again, like I was watching the Phillies game or something. All right, who's your value play? I wrote down two. I decided on one. Probably made the wrong decision.
I'm going to stack my value play quarterback and my value play wide receiver. I'm going to go with Josh Downs at Jacksonville. Price is $4,100 on DraftKings, $5,600 on FanDuel. Downs has 23 targets, 18 receptions, and 191 receiving yards in the three games that Gardner Minshew has played the higher percentage of snaps over Anthony Richardson.
I don't dislike it. I don't, not at all. Okay. I'm going to tell you the guy that I almost landed on. I wrote down a name first, and I went, no, I better not. I'll go to this guy instead. Justin Jefferson is out this week, right?
Yes.
So what happens with KJ Osborne? I looked at his price and I'm like, I think the 6,200 is a little high, but I was like, I would think there'd be some value there because I'm not really sure what Chicago does well anymore on defense, right? It's just true, but it is in Chicago and it seems a little risky. So I decided to go to something that's even riskier. Let me see if his price is a little cheaper. I think it is. Yep, it is cheaper. Another guy I looked at, but I didn't write down, was Marquise Brown against the Rams. I like the 5,300, don't love the 7,000. But I settled on a guy that I believe I may have said something about him last week. I'm not sure if he was one of my value plays. I'd have to double check. I know I put him in a lineup. I regret that now. Jameson Williams is going to have a blow-up week. Whether it's this week or it's next week or the week after, I will probably go on tilt and say that he's my value play until it happens.
Jameson Williams got the Jonathan Taylor treatment last week. Just didn't see the field very much.
He didn't, and I expect that to change, and it's not the best matchup this week.
It's shocking because they were out like half of their starting receiving corps.
That was why I had hope. The fact that, you know, Amon Ross St. Brown was out, right, I believe. It seemed like it was a perfect mix and opportunity for him, and they just didn't deliver. I think he played like a third of the snaps or something. And remember, he wasn't coming back from injury. He was coming back from suspension.
Yeah, and again, his price is still ridiculously low at $3,600 on DraftKings, $5,500 on FanDuel. He's easy to fit in there to your wide receiver three slot. And
yeah.
He should return triple value eventually, if not this week, maybe next week.
And I think when he returns, it's going to be four or five times value, honestly. He's going to have a huge game.
And as we talked about earlier, I think that Detroit's going to have more success throwing the ball against Tampa than running a good ball against Tampa. So,
yep. All right. So we're at five. We're at five. That means to hit the over, we have to hit two of the tight ends.
I think that's quite possible.
I think we're going to hit one and it's going to be a push, but okay. Because what's new? All right. Who are you paying up for at the tight end position?
I'm going to go right up to the top of the board and take TJ Hockenson at Chicago, 6,600 on DraftKings, 6,700 on FanDuel. He's actually the second highest priced guy on FanDuel, top priced guy on DraftKings. The only competent tight ends to face Chicago this year, Travis Kelce and Logan Thomas, both went off against this defense. Plus, if Justin Jefferson misses this game, and yes, he is going to now, Hock will see even more targets.
Yep.
And he already has 8 or more targets in 4 of the Vikings' first games. Now, as a Vikings fan, of course, I would love to see him not drop balls hitting him right in the face or right in the numbers. But again, beggars can't be choosers. If Minnesota's got any chance in this game, they're going to throw the ball a lot to Hockenson.
Well, Salt and Pepper said it best. Push it. Push it good. Yeah, we got to push. I've got Hock as my payup also.
Well, it should come as no surprise then that the guy that I'm staying away from is the highest priced guy in FanDuel. He's second highest priced guy in DraftKings, and that's Sam Laporta at Tampa Bay. Now, didn't you just say that you think that they're going to throw the ball a lot in this game rather than run the ball because you can't run the ball as easily against Tampa? Well, yeah, I did that. And truth be told, I love Sam Laporta. I'm going to hate to have to call him my stay away this week. But everybody and their mother is going to be chasing the 2 touchdowns from last week, which I'd like to say came on only 4 targets and only 3 catches, which seems unsustainable. And despite facing 3 top-tier tight ends in their first 4 games, Tampa has not allowed any of them to top 12 PPR points. So you know what? It's not as great a matchup as you might think. Again, there's going to be throwing in the game by Detroit, but it's going to go to the receivers and not the tight end.
Here's the thing. We don't have a match, but I did write Laporta down. And then I wrote Kittle down. And then I wrote Goddard down, okay? So it would seem that I would default to the highest-priced guy, but I did not. I defaulted to Dallas Goddard for two main reasons. One, he got his this past week, right? Mm-hmm. A.J. Brown complained and got his ever since. Smitty wasn't real happy with not getting his this past week, right? And we already know it's going to be tough to throw against the Jets. On top of that, the Jets have 2 fantastic linebackers in Quincy Williams and Mosley. So I just don't love Goddard at all. I really don't like Kittle against the Cleveland team either. I'd probably roll the dice on
and again, Laporta all before three any of those three guys, of them. But Laporta, Kittle, and Goddard, people are going to be chasing based on last week's points.
Yep, absolutely. But I settled on the cheapest guy of the 3, which is unusual for me. But Goddard was my stay away. So we're still at a push. It's going to come down to the value play.
And I don't think we're going to match here, although
probably
if
not.
You were listening to my value play tight end from last week, maybe you will. And for those people that were listening last week, my value play tight end was Dalton Schultz against Atlanta. If you follow me on Twitter, you know that on Sunday mornings at 11 a.m., I post all of my favorite sleepers at each position. And one of those sleepers I posted is also my value play this week. And that's Logan Thomas at Atlanta. His price at DraftKings is $3,500. His price on FanDuel is $5,400. Every number one tight end not named Luke Musgrave has gone off against Atlanta, including my value play from last week, Dalton Schultz.
Well, there is one other tight end that doesn't do well against Atlanta. Do you know who that is? Kyle Pitts. It feels like he's fighting Atlanta.
That's
too.
That's a good point.
Pitts had a very nice week last week.
He did have a great week.
And because of that, I actually looked at him and went, he's $3,500. I'm going to make him my value. No, I'm not.
He's going to get one catch for 8 yards. You know what's going to happen?
Not doing it. He's not going to be my value play. I'm not falling for that trap. He can go off. He can have 8 catches, 127 yards, and 3 touchdowns, and I won't feel bad about it. I decided to go higher on the board. And this is I'm surprised you didn't hit on this. Maybe it's price-wise. But I know you like to pick on Arizona, right?
Yes.
Tyler Higbee's my value play.
Here's the thing. I love Tyler Higbee. I thought he was going to be a huge play this past week with the return of Cooper Kupp because, again, you get into the red zone, and what are you going to do? You can't cover Puka, Cooper, and Higbee.
Right.
Well, and obviously they play Kyren Williams in the red zone all the time too, and he's getting lots of touches. There just wasn't enough balls to go around. Stafford doesn't throw the ball enough anymore to have three high-end players. So, yeah, it's a great matchup. I considered it, but I'm like, you know what? I can't handle those days where he has and 14.
Hold on. We're going to have a red light special here. You have made me change my mind. But I'm not going to match with you. I'm not going to pick your guy.
That's fine.
Kyle Pitts is my value play. I'm going Kyle Pitts. I'm all in.
In true degenerate style, Kyle Pitts.
At that price, you can't really go wrong, though, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're playing...
Oh, yeah. I mean, so we're joking about Tyler Higbee and his prospects and whatnot. You can look at that same game and just go with Zach Ertz against the Rams.
Yeah. You could also look at... Taysom Hill is only $300. It's $300 more than him. Taysom Hill. Mm-hmm. And they're not using Taysom as a gadget player like they did in years past. Tyler Conklin's $200 cheaper. Hayden Hurst.
I like Conklin a lot this week. Actually, I've put him in a few lineups already.
Yeah, Philly's almost, they're almost quite, not quite Arizona, but they're kind of close, right, over time. It's just, No, you know what? Pitts has the most upside, I think. I do like the Logan Thomas call. But Pitts has the most upside, so I'll make him my value play. But that means we pushed, and Vegas wins, like always.
You know it.
Always. You know who else wins? Our listeners, if they follow you on Twitter, at Nuclear Harley. And, of course, they can follow me, at Steve Gallo NFL. And you know what else makes them even bigger winners? If they subscribe to The Huddle and take advantage of all the wonderful tools and articles and the Daily Dominator, this, that, and the other thing, and the fact that it's not something that just runs now through the end of the season, it's for an entire year. Your renewal will be this time next year. So if you haven't signed up, get in that crusty old wallet and bust out the credit card and sign up for thehuddle.com. Other than that, Harley, we're getting to that point where it's going to be in the 60s and 50s, and it's nice to bust out some stouts. So with that, I say to you, get blitzed responsibly. Cheers.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.